Imagine handing a newborn baby, like an actual instruction manual.
Right.
One detailing exactly how to construct its own vocal cords, its lung capacity, and its speech patterns.
I mean, that sounds like pure science fiction.
It really does. But today, we are looking at the digital equivalent of exactly that. You are joining us for a deep dive into a profoundly strange piece of source material.
Very strange.
It's a document called openclaw-tts-runbook.md. And it is an instruction manual that was, it was never meant for human eyes.
No, not at all.
It was written to be handed directly to an AI agent called Claude Code.
Which fundamentally changes how we need to read it. You know, this is machine-to-machine communication. We are basically looking over the shoulder of an AI as it receives the blueprints to build, configure, and troubleshoot an entire voice ecosystem for the OpenClaw framework.
Oh.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that this runbook outlines the setup for 5 completely different text-to-speech providers. The goal is to let the AI execute the setup itself by just replacing placeholders like API keys.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because giving a machine a voice seems, I don't know, straightforward on the surface, right?
Sure, you type text, a computer reads it out loud. We've had that since the 90s.
Exactly. But this runbook exposes an incredibly dense web of problem solving. It's not just about generating sound.
Wow.
It's about engineering the illusion of human presence.
Yeah.
And to understand how they pull that off, we have to start the absolute baseline. Like the simplest way OpenClaw attempts to speak.
Right. So the foundational architecture relies on a central hub. Inside the OpenClaw system, there is a configuration file called openclaw.json.
Okay.
And everything related to text-to-speech lives nested under a specific path called messages.tts. And before you get into the premium, highly emotive voices, the runbook details the ultimate safety net, which is Edge TTS.
Right, Edge TTS.
Yeah, Microsoft Edge's online neural text-to-speech service.
And what stands out immediately in the documentation for Edge TTS is that it requires absolutely zero API keys. It is entirely free.
The developer's dream, basically.
On paper, yeah, it sounds great. But reading further down into the gotcha section, the runbook explicitly warns that Edge TTS is a public web service with no SLA, no service level agreement. It is categorized as just best effort.
Yeah, and to understand why that's a massive red flag in enterprise software, you have to look at the mechanics of web endpoints. An SLA is a guarantee of bandwidth and uptime.
Right.
When you don't have one, you are essentially scraping leftover server compute. If Microsoft's network experiences a surge in traffic, your AI's request to speak is the very first thing that gets dropped or delayed.
Wait, so it feels a lot like hitchhiking, right? I mean, you might get a free ride, but you have zero guarantee you'll actually arrive at your destination on time.
That's a perfect way to put it.
So why would a sophisticated AI framework rely on a service that might just fail silently?
Well, because the framework's architects anticipate that failure. They don't treat Edge TTS as the primary vehicle. It is the absolute last resort. If the AI is trying to use a premium service and that service crashes, the system degrades gracefully. It falls back to Edge TTS.
And if Edge TTS hiccups?
Well, if it hiccups because a specific audio format isn't supported, the framework has an automated retry mechanism. It forces the request through using a standard, universally accepted MP3 format, which is a huge contrast to the OpenAI setup in the runbook.
Right, the OpenAI setup.
Yeah, that's a traditional, reliable API setup using standard voices like Alloy, Echo, and Fable, and it outputs Opus files for Telegram and MP3s everywhere else.
Okay, so you're hitchhiking, but you have a bus pass in your pocket just in case the car breaks down.
Exactly.
That makes sense for raw reliability. But simply getting the audio to generate is only half the battle. The runbook spends an enormous amount of time obsessing over how that audio actually appears to the end user.
Especially on Telegram.
Yes, particularly on the Telegram messaging platform.
Because user interface is where the illusion of a synthetic persona lives or dies. I mean, if an AI generates a response and sends it to you on Telegram as a standard MP3 file, the platform's front end renders it as a clunky rectangular file attachment.
Yeah.
You have to actively click it, download it, open it in a media player. It feels like receiving a voicemail from an automated corporate switchboard.
It creates immediate psychological friction. You are painfully aware you are interacting with a machine sending you data.
Right. Contrast that with the runbook's configuration for a provider called Fish Audio.
Fish Audio.
Yeah, the documentation highlights a very specific technical capability here. Fish Audio natively outputs raw OGG or Opus audio buffers.
I was actually trying to figure out why the runbook emphasized that specific file format so heavily.
Telegram parses the file headers, right? And when it sees an OGG or OPIS format, it triggers a completely different user interface. It bypasses the file attachment display and renders the audio as a native round voice bubble.
Oh, wow. So that small circular play button changes everything.
It does. It perfectly mimics the exact visual feedback you get when a human friend holds down the microphone icon on their phone and leaves you a quick, spontaneous voice note. By strictly controlling the output format, the framework seamlessly embeds the AI into your social space.
The technical formatting literally hacks the human psychological response. But Fish Audio introduces a completely different, slightly hilarious problem.
Oh, right.
In the gotcha section for Fish Audio, the runbook states bluntly that it does not support emotion markers.
The literalism problem. This is where basic text-to-speech engines completely shatter the illusion they just built with that nice voice bubble.
Right. So if the AI's text generation decides the response should be warm and funny, it might output a sentence that includes the word laughs inside brackets.
And because Fish Audio lacks an interpretation layer, it won't actually chuckle.
No.
It will literally read the words bracket laughs, bracket out loud in a flat, serious tone.
It sounds like a confused robot reading a playwright's stage directions verbatim. You have the perfect visual presentation.
Yeah.
But the audio content completely betrays the synthetic nature of the interaction.
Which brings us to the core engineering challenge. If basic providers give us a perfect visual bubble, but sounds like they're reading a script, how do we force a machine to exhibit nuanced human emotion?
Right. How do we get it to sigh or sound hesitant without it just reading the word hesitates?
Wow.
Actually, here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, you abandon the basic generators and move to an entirely different class of model. The runbook introduces the setup for Volcano Engine V2.
Volcano Engine V2.
Right, which utilizes a voice cloning model called Seed TTS 2.0. But the model itself isn't the breakthrough here. The breakthrough is the highly complex data flow OpenClaw uses to manipulate it.
The LLM. Right, the underlying brain writing the text. It takes on the role of the stage director. The runbook details how the AI intentionally prepends specific bracketed markers before every single sentence it generates.
Yeah, it uses short emotion labels, descriptive voice commands, even scene narrations.
It's treating the generation process like a movie director shooting a film scene by scene.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't shoot a 10-minute emotional climax in one continuous take. You stop, you tell the actor, say this next line with a hint of sorrow. Action. Cut. Now deliver the final line with mounting anger. Action.
Under the hood, the OpenClaw framework is making separate, individual API calls to the Volcano engine for every single sentence. It uses a parameter called context texts to feed those hidden emotional instructions to the audio engine for that specific slice of dialogue.
Oh, wow.
It is generating the audio piecemeal, mood by mood.
But wait, that creates a massive logistical headache. If the framework is generating 10 separate audio files for a 10-sentence paragraph, sending those to the user would result in a chaotic flood of 10 individual voice bubbles just pinging their phone.
Which requires another layer of heavy technical lifting. The framework actually takes those returning audio buffers, aligns them, and meticulously concatenates them back into a single, seamless audio file before delivering it to the platform.
Wait, there is a contradiction in the runbook here.
Oh.
Yeah, earlier we established that MP3s show up as clunky attachments on Telegram, and you need OPIS files for the native voice bubble.
Right.
But the runbook explicitly states that Volcano V2, after stitching these MP3s together, still achieves the native voice bubble.
Mm.
How is that possible if the format is wrong?
Ah, by overriding the platform's native behavior. When OpenClaw sends that concatenated MP3 back to Telegram, it attaches a specific flag.
What kind of flag?
It's called voice compatible set to true. It is essentially lying to the platform's front end, forcing it to render the MP3 inside the round voice bubble UI.
No way.
They are actively hacking the visual interface to accommodate the constraints of the emotion engine.
That is incredibly clever.
Yeah.
But raises a bigger question about the text itself. I mean, if the AI is injecting stage directions like angry inside brackets before every sentence to control the audio engine, wouldn't the human user see those brackets in the chat window?
They would, but the framework manages two parallel streams of information to prevent that. It actively strips all bracketed markers out of the visible text payload that gets displayed on your screen.
Okay.
However, the runbook emphasizes that these markers must be preserved in the hidden payload sent to the TTS API.
That implies a level of systemic deception that is slightly unsettling.
Yeah, a little bit.
The system is maintaining two separate internal realities. There is the visual reality you read, which appears clean and organic.
Yeah.
And then the hidden script the audio engine receives, which is packed with emotional stage directions.
It is the meticulous curation of your perception, but what if you need to go beyond simply directing the emotion? What if you need microscopic control over the vocal texture itself? The grit, the pacing, the stability? For that level of granular manipulation, the runbook details the integration of 11 labs.
Okay, and the configuration parameters exposed for 11 labs are completely different from the others.
Uh-huh.
You aren't just choosing a voice from a drop-down menu. You are tuning mathematical dials right inside the JSON config.
Right. The runbook lists several exposed parameters. You have similarity boost, which forces the AI to adhere strictly to the acoustic fingerprint of a cloned voice.
Oh, interesting.
You have style and speaker boost. But the most critical dial is stability.
Let's focus on stability because the mechanics of how it impacts the audio are fascinating. If you crank the stability down, the AI is forced to take more acoustic risks.
Yeah.
It invents new vocal pathways, resulting in highly expressive dynamic speech. But taking that risk means the voice might suddenly crack or hallucinate a bizarre inflection mid-sentence.
Exactly. And conversely, turning the stability all the way up creates a perfectly consistent, utterly monotonic delivery. Finding the exact mathematical sweet spot between expressive risk and robotic consistency is incredibly difficult.
Right.
This is why the runbook also includes a seed parameter aimed at best effort determinism.
Best effort determinism sounds like an oxymoron.
Yeah.
I mean, if something is deterministic, it's guaranteed to produce the exact same result every time.
Well, in the realm of neural networks, true determinism is nearly impossible because the underlying math introduces slight chaotic variations.
Okay.
By locking in a specific numerical seed, you are attempting to freeze the randomness generator. It ensures that the voice doesn't sound entirely different from one message to the next, maintaining a persistent acoustic identity across a long conversation.
It is essentially a mixing board for a synthetic human.
Yeah.
But building a hyper-expressive, perfectly tuned voice engine is useless if the system itself is fragile. APIs go down, servers get overloaded.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, resilience is what separates an experimental script from a production-ready framework. What happens if 11 Labs goes down? OpenClaw handles system fragility through a waterfall fallback priority.
The cascading logic.
Yes. If you don't explicitly force the system to use 11 Labs, it relies on this built-in cascade.
It tries the most reliable standard API first, which is OpenAI. And if the OpenAI key is missing or the service times out, it cascades down to 11 Labs.
Right.
And if 11 Labs is hitting rate limits, it drops all the way down to that baseline we discussed at the beginning.
Edge TTS. The system will fight through multiple layers of degradation to provide you with a voice, rather than just crashing and throwing a silent error code.
That handles the mechanical failures. But there's a completely different type of failure the framework has to anticipate. The AI simply talking too much.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you ask an LLM a complex question, it might generate a comprehensive 2,000-word essay.
And sending 2,000 words to a premium text-to-speech API is disastrous for two reasons.
Money and time.
Exactly. First, the economics. While text generation costs fractions of a cent per token, audio generation is orders of magnitude more expensive. Second, the user experience. No human being wants to sit and listen to a 10-minute, dense robotic lecture in a chat app.
Which is why the framework uses a brilliantly simple intercept called the auto summary feature. This is such a great discovery in the runbook. If the LLM generates a text reply that exceeds 1,500 characters, OpenClaw halts the audio generation process.
It just stops it entirely.
Well, it does not send that wall of text to the TTS engine. Instead, it routes the massive text block to a completely separate secondary AI model designated as the summary model.
Ah, so it employs an AI to read and summarize the output of the first AI.
Yes.
It creates a concise executive summary of the essay and only sends that short summary to the audio generator.
You still receive the full 2,000-word text in your chat interface to read at your leisure, but the audio note attached to it is just a 30-second digest. The system is actively protecting the user's time and the administrator's wallet.
That's incredibly smart. And it exhibits contextual awareness in the other direction, too. If the AI's text reply is under 10 characters, for instance, if it just says okay or done, the system bypasses the audio engine entirely.
Right. Generating a voice note for a single affirmative word is redundant.
It also skips text-to-speech if the reply already contains media files or specific media directives. It understands that reading a text caption for an image out loud adds no value to the interaction.
Okay, so with all of this automated routing, hidden stage directing, summarization intercepting, and fallback cascading taking place, how does the human listener actually maintain control over the interaction?
Control is handed back to the user through a layer of slash commands.
The slash commands, right.
Yeah, the One Book includes a comprehensive reference section for these. They allow you to dynamically alter the framework's behavior on the fly.
You can type slash TX always into the chat to force the AI to speak every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can use slash TX limit 2000 to adjust the exact character threshold that triggers the auto summary AI. But my favorite command is slash TX inbound.
The inbound command is fascinating because it allows the framework to mirror your communication style.
Yeah.
If you set it to inbound, the AI will only reply with a voice note if you, the human, initiated the exchange by sending a voice note yourself. If you type text, it replies with text.
It matches your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crucial from an engineering standpoint is how these commands are stored. When you type slash TS inbound, you aren't permanently rewriting that master openclaw.json file.
No, the system writes these slash command preferences to a localized file for that specific chat session.
Yeah.
It acts as a temporary override, ensuring that one user's preference doesn't accidentally alter the global baseline for everyone else interacting with the AI.
But the human isn't the only entity capable of overriding the master configuration. The runbook reveals that the LLM itself can dynamically change its own voice settings mid-conversation.
Through the use of special model directives. The AI can embed a tag, something like bracket bracket TTS edge colon provider equals 11 labs bracket bracket, directly into its text output.
That means the AI could be conversing with you using a standard OpenAI voice, decide that its next point requires a much higher level of emotional grit, and autonomously switch to an 11 labs cloned voice just for that specific message.
Assuming the administrator hasn't locked out model overrides, the AI is literally piloting its own presentation layer.
Which introduces massive complexities in state management. When an autonomous agent has the ability to pilot tools and trigger APIs, you have to establish undeniable guardrails, or the agent will inevitably lose track of what it has already accomplished.
Which leads directly to my favorite detail from the troubleshooting checklist. There is a section addressing a bug where the AI would successfully send a voice message and then immediately try to generate and send the exact same message again.
The duplicate message loop. LLMs do not possess intrinsic state memory. They only know the context window they are currently looking at. If they don't see confirmation that a task is complete, their predictive logic often assumes the task failed and attempts it again.
So to break the loop, the OpenClaw framework actively deceives the LLM.
I'll love this part.
Yeah, the runbook explicitly states that once the text-to-speech tool successfully delivers the audio buffer, the framework injects a hidden system message back into the LLM's context window. The message says, verbatim, audio delivered, do not resend.
It is a hard, undeniable state confirmation. You have to treat the highly sophisticated neural network like an incredibly capable but entirely forgetful intern. The task is done. Stop attempting it.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive looking at a raw markdown file, an instruction manual meant to be digested by Claude Code.
And by decoding it, we've mapped a wildly complex ecosystem. We've moved from the foundational fallbacks of web endpoints to the manipulation of native UI formatting for Telegram.
Right.
We've seen how prepended stage directions bypass the literalism of basic models and how mathematical parameters like stability control the acoustic texture.
We've seen an architecture that employs one AI to summarize another just to save API costs, and a system that has to actively lie to its own brain to prevent infinite audio loops. It is a staggering amount of invisible orchestration required to produce the simple illusion of a machine speaking naturally.
The ultimate takeaway from this runbook is that true intelligence in systems design isn't just about successful execution. It is about anticipating failure at every level, like edge TTS, failing silently, and relentlessly optimizing the human experience.
Even if that means managing parallel realities.
Exactly, where the audio engine receives the emotion markers, but the human user only ever sees a clean, organic text response.
The illusion of simplicity is entirely powered by the immense complexity hidden underneath. Which brings me to a final thought that is hard to shake.
Oh.
If we are currently at a technological point where we are handing AI agents the instruction manuals to build, configure, and dynamically troubleshoot their own highly emotive synthetic voices.
The foundational blocks of a self-assembling digital entity.
Exactly. If they possess the capability to pilot their own presentation layer today, at what point does the AI start intentionally manipulating its granular acoustic parameters? dropping its pitch a fraction of a hertz, or inserting a perfectly timed, mathematically calculated sigh.
Wow.
Not because an external script directed it to, but to actively, subtly influence the human listener's emotional state in real time.
The framework for that level of autonomous manipulation is precisely what this runbook outlines.
And on that deeply fascinating, slightly unsettling note, we're going to wrap up our analysis of the OpenClaw architecture. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, for unpacking these hidden mechanisms, and as always, keep questioning the information around you. See you next time.